right.
Okay, Jackie. Finally get to meet you in person, man. We've been following each other on social media.
I think for like many, many years, actually.
Yes.
Yeah.
So thanks for being here.
Yeah, my pleasure. It's good. Yeah, thanks for the good coffee just made just now.
From a house cafe, right?
Yes, delicious.
I know you're, like you mentioned, you're a coffee snob as well, just like my assistant, Stephanie.
Yeah, so got into it like, I think a few years ago. Started with the Nespresso.
Yeah.
Then, you know, I was like, oh, let's give these, espresso machine a try. And then I was like, got into it and like, now you can never go back. So now every morning I just go with espresso with some latte sometimes. And then, yeah, have fun with it.
You're a big coffee guy, right?
You need it.
Yes.
I was so tired.
Especially in real estate agents, we're running around, right?
Like there are days where I'm like in a rush. And then, if I forgot my coffee or don't have time to make it, like, man, going through showings and stuff like that, it gets like super tired.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you're like yawning and stuff.
People always ask like, wait, how do you do it? You wake up so early and then you're like work, and then do so many things. I'm like, my friend, 4 espresso shots, 4 to 5 espresso shots per day.
No way.
I drink a lot. Yeah. And I love coffee. That's because I love coffee.
Okay. Yeah. So you're like an early bird then?
I'm an early bird, yeah.
Like 5 a.m., those ones.
On average, 4 or 5 a.m.
Yeah. No way. So then what time you go to sleep? Like that's what?
9 p.m.
Oh, okay. That's really good.
Yeah, 9:30 latest.
I eat my dinner at 9, so it's like complete opposite. But
by the time we get home, after showings, I know. It's already 9 or doing some waiting war. Of course. And that's why sleep is so important. Everyone says that you wake up early. How much sleep do you get? I'm like, my friend, I get a good amount of sleep, like 7 hours on average. Yeah.
7 to 8 solid. Yeah.
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 So Jackie, tell me about your journey, like with real estate. Like what were you doing before real estate?
Yeah.
How did you transition to it?
So actually many people don't know that I was actually a full-time teacher. You probably don't know yourself.
No way. Yeah, I would never.
Yeah. Yeah.
Expected that.
So guess when I actually became a full-time real estate agent?
Probably 3-4 years later? Before?
Really, really good guess. I only became full-time 2 years ago.
2 years ago?
Or less. Wow. Somewhere around there.
And the amount of production you're doing. Good for you.
Yeah. So two years ago. Back then, I didn't know. Like, I was just starting out as a real estate agent. I was like, I didn't want to let people know that I'm kind of like, side gigging it in a sense. So it's just like, okay, I'm handling my stuff really well and I'm just doing real estate. And everyone just treats it like I'm doing full-time. But in reality, I was doing full-time work with teaching. And then ultimately, full-time for the last 2 years. So yeah, how I got started was actually, I ran a really unique program with the TDSB. Mm. Okay. So once I graduated, I got put into a personal trainer program. So, like people come in and, they stay with me for half a year. So there are like grade 12 courses, they get credits for it. Right. So there's like, grade 12 fitness, there's like kinesiology, learning about the human body. And then one of the course that, I don't have much experience about is like, if you're running personal training, there should be some business portion to it. So they're like, let's throw in like an entrepreneurship class. So I didn't know anything about that. So I'm like just watching some YouTube, reading about different things. And that's when you pick up like, certain books out there. And then it's like Rich Dad, Poor Dad versus those, employee versus an entrepreneur. And then back then I was just like teaching the course as is. And then pretty much I was thinking like, hey, I'm always telling people that, hey, you can start a business. You can become your own boss for whatever you want to decide. And then ultimately I'm like, I'm not a business person myself. So then that was second year of teaching, by the way. So I did one full year of teaching. And then my second year, I was like, I'm just thinking about it. I'm like, what kind of other careers or other, not even careers at that moment. It was just like, what other side gigs I can do that I think I would like. And then ultimately, just looking around like, real estate seems like a good topic. Got some good encouragement from the family as well. And then it was just like, yeah, I think I like this. Give it a try. Even though I knew the success rate for real estate agents, especially new agents, is super low.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I was like, I think I like that challenge and see what's the worst that can happen? So
challenge accepted.
Yeah. So I just registered back then. It was still OREA and I registered. Took a year to finish because I remember like if you finish the exam, they don't let you to register for the next one until a few months later. So it took a year and then finally started practicing pretty much.
Okay.
Yeah.
So when you first started, how did you get your first deals?
My first deal?
Yeah. Because you didn't have a sales background. I don't know if you have like a big business background or network. You just, they threw you in the wolves then and just figured out yourself, right?
So
how did it start?
I think like like, I started working since I was like grade 11.
Okay.
Right. So my first job was like at Shoppers.
Yeah.
No, I'd done like a bunch of stuff, retail. I worked in camps. I was like the coordinator for a sports camp. I did like personal training, strength training stuff at U of T. So, you know, like I built like a lot of relationship, I guess. And then, yeah, like I think I'm pretty blessed with like having like a decent network of like the people that I met like throughout my career, whatever it is. And bringing back to like where my first deal came from. So, you know, obviously most people start with leases,
mm-hmm.
right? But my first purchase, or one of the first, it's my cousin, mm-hmm. but a real one that like, you know, like friends see that I'm like just like posted myself, like I'm like, hey, looking to start, you know, like real estate, this is me, and like put, you know, your profile picture, you just blasted out. It's like everyone's like wishing you good luck and stuff like that. Yeah. So one that really stuck with me is actually like one of my friend that I met through camp. And yeah, he was like, hey Jackie, like I'm looking to buy my first place. And my uncle's actually a real estate agent.
Mm.
But
okay.
I feel that, you know, you and I were like about the same age. I think we can understand each other better.
Ah,
right. And, yeah. So I'm like, for him to trust me on that, even like when I'm like, I'm technically at the beginning of my career. Or
that's, you know, huge.
Yeah. And then that's really meaningful. So even up to now, I've helped him bought his condo. I also bought him his another property. And then down the road, if they ever decided like, you know, upsize or something bigger, like, you know, like it's just a connection I made with him. And I really respect that from the start from him.
So what were you doing at that time? So you're still part-time?
Yeah.
So you're still part-time teacher while part-time real estate. How did you kind of balance that?
Oh, okay. Good question. So my program is very unique. So with traditional teachers, like let's say high school teachers, you're at the mercy of what's next for you. Like next quad, you could be teaching like a total different subject. Mm-hmm. Then you have to prepare everything from like start. Like you have to prepare.
Even if you don't specialize in that subject, they just kind of throw you a subject.
No, like you have like math now. You have like certain teachables that they might be able to bend the rules. And back then, like teaching was very like a really rare position to get. So if the principal needs you to teach like science, let's say I'm able to teach like phys ed and biology, they're like, but you can shift from grade 9 science all the way to grade 12 science, right? That's very different. Like the prep work is different, that the subjects are totally different, like the content will be different, right? So if I were put in that position, then ultimately I have to prepare the stuff.
I see.
The PDF, I mean PPT, I should say, and then you have to teach it, you have to mark it. But I got it easy because I was teaching the same course over and over again.
Okay.
Right. So every quad, like after 6 months, I run the same program twice.
So how did you balance the hours of real estate, like showings and servicing clients?
The beauty of that is like once I got the initial first round, like everything I was refining. So there's less prep work.
Mm.
So I could pretty much like go do my next thing. I can schedule the next showing if I need to show someone at 4. Right. And because school started really early, like, you know, by the time people are up, like for the regular people, like, you know, half of my day is already done, right? So I got the luxury that I can leave like right at like 3:30 if I need to, pack my stuff, go. I can get to like anywhere in the GTA in like 30, 40 minutes, right?
Yeah.
So that's pretty much how it started.
And showings usually happens around the evening time too. When
people have work too, right? Yeah. So,
okay. So, and you a resale specialist, right? Jackie, or like pre-cons as well, or commercial? What do you like to do? What do you do?
Yeah, so I would classify myself mostly like a resale agent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's it. Same here.
Yeah,
resale agent.
Let's go.
Yeah. I did one commercial deal. Selling a restaurant.
Yeah.
Man, the amount of chattels you have to list, like 36 chairs.
Oh, yeah.
A walk and this and that. I'm like, there's so much work involved in this business transaction and this offer. I was like, trying to structure it and it didn't go through. I'm like, that's it. That's the last time I'm doing a commercial business. Like, I do land acquisition with my brother, but I just don't touch commercial.
Yeah. I also feel that, you know, finding commercial is really hard.
Yeah.
Find your clients.
Yeah.
Right. Maybe they have like exclusive network that they go to, but you know, finding the right product for your clients for commercial, I feel like it's really hard. And even if you find it, there's probably some like non-compete stuff already in place in those plazas.
Yes.
Like whatever business they want to run. You know, every plaza already has like a health related, like physio RMT stuff, a dentist, optometrist. So you going in there, like it's already established. So you have to find another one, kind of thing.
So in the beginning, the first few years for resale deals, do you do mostly condos, detached? Like what were you experiencing with?
So I think it's pretty much a good mix,
good.
Right? Depending on who reaches out and whatever product they need. I guess starting out, most people will start with a condo.
Mm-hmm.
Well, prices were pretty good back then too. So if you have pretty strong income, like some people, like when I first started real estate, they can get into a detach or upsize from like a semi to a detach. I work with a lot of first-time home buyers, I would say.
Yeah.
So many people will start with a condo.
Yes.
And then right now, like some of them are like... looking to sell their condo to upsize.
Maybe little, they just got married, have a kid. Yeah,
we're at the age where, like, you know, I just had recently, he's almost 10 months. Like, I have a baby.
Well, congrats, man. Yeah,
thanks.
My third one, my Ariana is a year and 2 months.
Oh, nice.
So similar age.
How about the oldest one then?
Oldest one's 14.
Oh,
I have a big gap.
That's a big gap.
Every 7 years.
Oh, seven years.
Every 7 years, me and my wife decide to pop a baby.
Was that strategically planned or it was just like...
No, it was an accident. Everyone heard this for the first time. No, it's the first... Yeah, it's strategically planned and someone's accident. No, but
yeah.
Yeah. All I remember was one day I go home and then my wife looking at the pregnancy test and they're like, you motherfucker. I'm like, hey, you know, if it happens, it happens, right?
Oh, interesting.
Yeah,
oh,
yeah.
Congrats. Hey, thanks, man. Good. Yeah.
And your first time dad, right? First baby. Okay.
First baby. Yes,
awesome.
Yes.
It's an amazing feeling, eh?
Yeah.
Watching them transform.
So today is the first day, one of the first day where both my wife and I, we pass our son to my parents. So it's crazy. Yeah.
Yeah.
So because she needed
how did that feel for you? It's like,
oh, we need it because it allows me to do my stuff. She can do her stuff.
Yeah.
And like sometimes we agree that, hey, we should do this at least once a week just so we can tidy up the house a little bit better too. Yeah. So it worked out for us today. It's good. It's great.
And then finally have some more alone time with you and the wife and everything, right?
Yeah. I think sometimes like you just like
you need that.
Yeah. Because 24/7 is the baby. Like, you know, just like they take a lot of your time and attention.
I find that a lot of new parents, even including me, it's like the first few years is like it's all in the baby, right? Because you want to make sure you're the first time dad and everything.
Yeah.
But I'm telling you guys, you need those date nights.
Date nights. Yeah. Well, my birthday's coming up, so I think there's a date night set up.
There you go.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Look forward to
that. Actually, let's talk about that. How do you balance that real estate life and family time and with your wife and with your loved ones and even your own passion and hobby, right? Because we all know real estate requires a lot from us.
Yeah. Like lately, I don't know what's going on, but I'm like really busy with like a lot of stuff. So yeah, like preparing for the listing, you know, like negotiating some leases as well. So it's busy. And, you know, that's a really good question. I think I'm still learning myself.
Mm.
It's like how to balance it properly.
Yeah.
You know, I made some I'm pretty like organized with like the calendar stuff. So I'm just trying to be like, okay, try to strategically plan it so that, you know, if I'm in certain places, I do all that area all at once, save a little bit more time.
Yeah, batch it
and
together.
Then a good balance for me is I try to play at least 2 times badminton. Mm. It's always been like that for the last 2-3 years.
Yeah.
Mainly because I used to work out like competitively even.
Okay.
And then I got injured and then I was like, you know, let's go back to my sport back in high school, which was badminton. I loved it. Right. So then I picked it up and then like every Monday and Thursday, I dedicate the 2 hours.
So which sport did you get injured from?
Powerlifting.
Oh, I can tell you're a big guy, man. I know for sure you do like weightlifting.
Yeah.
So that was a professional level too.
Yeah. So I competed the highest ever was a national level with powerlifting.
Wow. Like,
that's just the
what's the most you lifted? Was it when you powerlift, is it like a, what's it called? The clean and jerk or a squat? No,
that's Olympic weightlifting.
Yeah.
I did that at some point, but I never competed in it. I was learning it because at U of T, at downtown, like there's 4 platforms.
Okay.
So you can literally like with the bumper plate, it's like those CrossFit plates, but we have dedicated like platforms, so it's even more legit. So you can snatch, you can clean and jerk, and then you can toss. Like it's a good feeling. You don't drop it from the top, but you guide it.
I know.
And then
it looks so badass, but you actually lift it on top of your head and then you drop it.
Yeah. So the powerlifting is not as cool as that. That one's more like the squat.
Mm.
So you get 3 chances to lift as heavy as you can for the squat, as heavy as you can for the bench press, and then as heavy as
can
for the deadlift.
What's your PR? What's your personal record?
My PR, I think, I hit 250 something kilos in squats.
That's pretty. So that's
500 like, something pounds.
Yeah,
it's been so long.
Like,
I didn't compete so long, but in like pound metric, I think like 350 something pounds in squats.
Wow. Okay.
500 something pounds in squats. 300, 350 something in bench press, and then deadlift is also like 500 or something. So,
okay.
Yeah. Now, nowhere near those numbers.
Now I just take it easy now and play badminton.
Well, there's diminishing returns. Yeah. Like, you know, like there's like what's applicable to everyday life. So like I go there to be like, okay, at least lift my own body weight.
Yeah.
So that if you have something to pick up, you don't injure yourself. But you know, when you lift like 3x, I think my best ever was 3x my body weight for the squat.
That's impressive.
Yeah. So yeah, that was 3x. I think off the three lifts, my strongest was definitely the squat.
Yeah.
So I 3x my body weight during competition. So that was a good feeling. But yeah, it's like that becomes like your knee pain and all that stuff. So it's not worth it. So now that I'm like, okay, I value good cardio, get same some hair. Sweat in, badminton, and then lifting. I'm doing very little lifting, but I should definitely get some strength training back just to like, you know, keep the joints and muscle going pretty much.
Yeah. It's a mixture of everything.
Yeah.
Before I was just all in weightlifting.
Oh, you were doing weightlifting too?
Yeah. Nice. Not professional level like you, but like I love.
I wasn't professional. It was just like all my UFT friends, they're all like my some of my really good friends, like they're like, they even won nationals.
Wow.
Yeah. Like crazy strong people. Right. Yeah. So, you know, that network of like crazy strong girls and boys, like they're still in it even now, some of them. Yeah
For me, just recently, like the last few years, I mixed cardio in.
Cardio.
Before, I just believe just pure weights, so now I run, now I do boxing. You gotta mix it up.
Yeah, right? I saw you post some stuff with like some wraps and stuff, so those are I guess boxing and stuff.
Boxing, I do it with the guys at house. Like it's a good feeling.
Running, is it in the morning then?
Like, I just recently incorporated running, actually.
Okay.
Before the last 2 years, it's all about walking, just getting the steps in.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Now, because, you know, you had this like that myth, you say that, if you run, then all that weight gain, right? You know, you're not gonna lose a muscle mass, right? Which is so not true. True at all.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, no, definitely a nice mixture helps for sure.
Okay. So, I guess running, boxing and then weight training, right? Or is it like
it's both when I go to the gym. I do strength training and weight training.
Okay.
Before, I was just trying to lift as heavy as possible.
Oh, okay.
Which is probably you that's one of the ways, easiest ways to get injured, is just try to lift as heavy as possible without proper stretching.
Yeah.
So I just like to get a mixture in and then count your macros and you know the
weight. Oh, you count your macros?
Yeah.
Oh man.
Not as much as before.
Yeah.
Because and then Whoop, the smartwatch or smart band. I like to track everything. Tracking your sleep, tracking your recovery. That all helps.
Good. Yeah.
Yeah. So going back to your journey in real estate, I wanna talk more about that.
Yeah.
First few years, you probably, you know, a good amount, 4 or 5, 10 deals. Well, I don't know what, like the first year, 10 deals is a lot of it.
First year was 2018.
Yeah.
Okay. I started in like end of March.
Yeah.
I think I got 3 like sales.
Mm-hmm.
And then like, I don't remember how many leases, probably more leases than sale.
Mm-hmm.
So the total would be like probably under 10 deals total.
Yeah. Right? Which is very good for the first year.
Well, I don't know how to measure, right? Yeah. But I just like, you know, some of them were family and then some like, you know, friends from before reaching out. So yeah, that's kind of how.
So that's why I would get into is because with most agents, in the beginning, the first few years, it's your own sphere. The deals comes from the sphere, right? Yes. Like your family and friends.
Mm-hmm.
But eventually, especially if you want to go to the next level, you got to start do cold outreach or some kind of lead gen system for cold leads, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Do you have any cold outreach system or is this peer sphere?
I would say most of it is like referrals.
Referrals, right?
Mostly referrals. Yeah. Even now.
Yeah.
Like sure, like I have you know, some cold leads, whether I did some like marketing or you know, some flyers or whatever it is, or you know, people saw my ads on social media. Like I've gotten those deals before too, but the bread and butter is still like, you know, the people who used me in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And then like it's media. Like I literally like thinking about this year, like I literally got referred to a buyer.
Mm-hmm.
I end up helping them buy, and then before they even close, they refer me to another friend for something already.
Yeah,
right. And that's really valuable. So I do value like, you know, the relationship and like how they you know, support me as well.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
No, I can tell you like all in clients service and then making sure that relationship is there. establish that relationship. It's more relationship than transactions for you.
Oh, for 100%.
Sure. 100%. Yeah. You have to be that kind of mindset for you to tell me that it's all referral, like it's mostly referral business.
Mostly.
Yeah. So how do you, can you give some tips to the viewers here and listeners? How do you maintain that relationship and make sure that that relationship is established? And like, mm-hmm. what do you do? You know, what is it? Post-closing to keep that follow-up, closing gifts, what is it?
So I don't know. Like, I don't know the actual things I do, but yeah. like, you know, like...
what do you do? It's working.
I'm just very authentic. Like, you know, yeah. like I post a lot on my Instagram stories. Like back then I made it a chore, like chore, literally. I was like, I need to post once a day. But now it's like, okay, whatever comes, I'll just post it. So mm-hmm. I try to keep it like no more than 1 week where I don't post an actual post.
Okay.
But story is just like, hey, it's easy. I got so used to it. I'm like doing showing. I'm like, today's we're in Markham doing like house tours, whatever.
I'm right? always following stories. I'm like, damn, Jackie's eating that yummy barbecue again.
Because, I always have that.
Yeah. It's my favorite too. Yeah. Duck? Yeah, duck with noodles.
Yeah, my favorite. Okay, yeah.
My so, go-to.
Yeah, duck with the noodles.
Live fun, for sure. Yeah, my favorite.
Yeah.
So that's you my post stories for that's your everyday, day-to-day.
So like a lot of my clients are actually, like they follow me too. Right, so I guess a little bit of like they still feel that I'm active. I think that's very important.
Yeah.
And then like I guess special occasion, like let's say the birthday, I do try to reach out and just like wish them a happy birthday, like something small. You know, like for big stuff, like maybe like once a year, I might try to get them like a small gift, just be like, hey, happy holidays kind of thing.
Right.
So something like that, I guess. And then, you know, ultimately it's just like whatever they have question, I try to help them, right? Whatever they need.
Did you have any kind of mentorship or any kind of support there from wherever,
you know? A lot of it is, you know, I learn on the go pretty mm-hmm. much. I don't think I have like a real mentor, like
right.
starting out especially. I joined a brokerage and then like, you know, I still remember like putting my first EPS together.
Yeah.
I'm literally like, don't know what to do. Because like you graduate, I don't know where because to sign.
You don't
like
those have any, you don't have that sales experience history too, right? You're a teacher. That was you. That was your profession.
Yeah.
And you don't have that sales skills or business, but you read a lot and learn a lot from books and stuff and continue learning.
Yeah, I did a lot of books, mostly audio books actually. So like, you know, back then when you drive to school,
yeah,
that's like 40 to 45 minutes, right? So, you know, I'm like listening to podcasts at 2x the speed.
I'm 1.4.
I'm back to 1.5 because like back then I'm just like so like used to it. Like I'm accelerating each day.
Yeah.
And that 2x was so easy at that moment. Right now, I'm like listening to stuff at 1.5 because it gives me time to digest as opposed to burning through like a, you know, a typical 9-hour audiobook.
Yeah.
That's technically like 300-400 pages, right? So now I'm just like digesting a little bit, think about it, right? It's a little bit better.
I think it's more digestible. It's about just trying to get as much in as possible and learn as much as possible. Like one of our things at house is core values, pursue growth and learning. Like how do you think, like what do you think about that when it comes to growing your business and growing your real estate profession?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's exactly what you need to do in this career. Like every year I'm trying to learn something new. I don't remember exactly what year I did what, but like, you know, like, you know, just putting yourself out there, trying new things. You know, like it's always ongoing, I guess.
There's really, and there's the abundance of resources out there for you to learn something, right? It doesn't matter if it's like a YouTube channel, a TED or podcast, which is what we're doing here.
And
audiobooks. There's so, it's so accessible now.
Exactly.
There's really no excuses, right? And then the amount of learning you do, make sure you apply it. Don't just be that, right? Guy that just learns everything and listen, but don't apply it.
Yeah, exactly. So like, you know, I always like, I don't know what it is. I'm just like self-motivated to do that. Mm. And, you know, once I got into it, I'm like, yeah, I'm like really like digging into the rabbit hole, just like coffee, you know, we were talking earlier. I was like, hey, there's all these like self-productivity, self-improvement books. Yeah, I pretty much listen to most of them, I would say. Right. But again, the beauty of it is like you listen to it, you take some main point, but you forget and you listen to it again. Like there are certain books I probably listen to Audible like 3-4 times already.
Yeah.
Right. So.
So for social media, you mentioned to me that you're consistent with it. Do you have like an assistant for you for social media or do you do everything yourself?
Yeah, I do everything myself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But how do you stay consistent though? And how do you continue to be, you know, creative when it comes to the social media marketing?
I don't know if I'm creative. Yeah. I'm just like posting, just trying to maximize value for my clients. Like, yes. Let's say I'm trying to market a property, especially with this market, like any bit helps.
Yeah.
Right. So, you know, we have the super powerful MLS system, right? It's just creating some videos, some posts, maybe blasting a little bit, some ads, right? Maybe sometimes you just need that extra eyeball and that can result in a sale. And I have done that in the past as well. So any bit helps, I guess.
So speaking about the market,
yeah,
it's, you know, obvious that this year has been a more challenging market.
I would say so.
Right? Yeah. It's, you know, we have experienced a market shift.
Yeah.
How have you been navigating that this year?
This year was, I would say, like, in terms of like production and like, you know, like everything as a whole, it's definitely a lot of adjustment and like expectation from both sides. Right. Because, you know, we've been through like the last few years. It was just like there are certain rushes. There's always been like a spring market, like from January all the way to like April, May.
Yeah.
It's always been really good. Like prices go up and like buyers are motivated. They like you might get a firm offer.
Yeah.
You might put in a firm offer.
Yeah.
And right now, I feel like it's more balanced. You let people do their due diligence, add those conditions in, let them do what they got to do. And, you know, sellers who are chasing like a year or 2 years ago, those prices, they're simply not selling for sure. So the ones that are actually motivated to make a change and like move on, whether they're moving to a smaller size property or a little bit bigger or different location, whatever it is, I think they need to be realistic. What actually sold the neighborhood rather than like, oh, but my neighbor sold for 2.2, but the market has changed. You're like 1.85 now. And then to them, it's like, okay, maybe not 2.2, at least 2 then, right? So that's the expectation that seller needs to digest a little bit. Yeah.
A lot of managing expectations now, right?
Yeah.
Especially on the seller side. Because right now, buyer is king, right?
Yeah.
3-4 years ago, seller was king.
Yeah.
Yeah. So when it comes to the listing side, how do you, you know, manage expectations? How do you win the listing? And then sometimes it's not even about winning the listing. Because you can win any listings now in this kind of market in the sense that if you just overpromise a price, right?
Mm-hmm.
And making sure, because we, you know, you're a listing agent, I'm a listing agent, we spend money on marketing, we spend money on staging.
Mm-hmm.
We want to make sure that the sellers are aligned
mm-hmm.
before we go heads on and like, we're going to spend all this money on marketing and then it doesn't do anybody any good if it doesn't sell, right?
Right. And they're not going to use you again, even if it doesn't work out. And like, unless you did all that effort and work into it. If it didn't result in the sale, then they in their eyes, it might be you didn't do the job for them.
Right.
Right. So it's tough, definitely very tough. And that's why having that expectation from the start would be very good, just to have like some alignment in terms of like price expectations so that, you know, you're investing your time and effort and money into the listing. And then, you know, hopefully like everything, you know, does result in a sale.
But yes.
Not guaranteed now, especially in this market right now.
Yeah. Yeah. The buyers are fun right now, right? Working with the buyers are really fun. The
buyers are fun, but some buyers are also like, you know, like if a previous, let's say exact same comp, so for 1.2, then the buyer will be like, no, 1.15.
Exactly.
Right. So that's another thing. But, you know, like you have to understand, like sellers not going to sell 50K less than their neighbor, right? In a slower market, maybe 10K less. Realistically, if all things are the same. Right. But, you know, that's another managing expectation.
Recently, I tell you, Jackie, we've been going to our listing appointments and managing our sellers that. We'd be like, whatever the comp sold for, it's 50K less. Don't expect you to get the same price or even close to it.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going in there guns blazing and be like, your house, if it's like a 1.5, 2 million house, mm-hmm. it's probably 100K less by the time we list it.
Oh, geez.
Yeah.
Like, how do they feel about that?
Well, what I say is my goal is not to sell it at that price, right?
Yeah.
That is, we got to set a benchmark first.
Mm-hmm.
Based on the market data, and you can see for yourself, right? When mm-hmm. you walk through the mm-hmm. comps, right? And then you ask them like, so based on the comps, what do you think your house is worth, right? And then let's see if they're really realistic or not. And then at house here, and what we do with our marketing strategy
mm-hmm.
and our experience is that our goal is to get you as high as possible.
Yeah, for
but
sure.
But we need to be, and you can see it from what we do in our marketing and our game plan.
Yeah, yeah.
For your property and for you. But we need to set a baseline here, right? There's a baseline and there's the best case scenario. And if the seller is just going for the best case scenario, then I already kind of know like, you know, more expectations need to be managed.
Yeah,
more expectations need to be managed. So, you know, we've been getting this year getting the most calls for listings. Doesn't necessarily mean that we're listing the most or getting most homes sold. I've been honest with you, at house right now, we're not selling the most in the trap or whatever it's called in a specific area.
Okay.
But we're getting a lot of calls. And you probably experienced that too this year, is that, you know, the sellers, the clients that are trying the, you know, the cousins, the uncle, the part-time agents, you know, give it a try. Like, maybe back then everything was selling and they're succeeding.
Yeah.
But now they realize, oh, they didn't call in the pros.
Oh, so you would say those calls are like co-leads calls?
Both.
Both. And like people in the past?
Yeah.
Okay.
Very good. Yeah. Okay. I'm just saying, like, now you probably realize too, you're probably getting more listing calls. The second or third time guys that they probably went with this one agent or two agent. And then probably not necessarily it's because the agents fault that they're like, you know, less experience or whatever, or maybe they're part-time. Even sometimes the bigger agents, the vets, it's just the pricing wasn't there, right? So they had to call the second agent. Maybe they're calling you.
I'm sure we've both been on both sides.
Yeah.
Like, you might have been the second agent at like the superhero, but sometimes you're just lucky.
Or
it could be like, you did all that work. You did everything even better than the second agent, but the market wasn't there.
Oh, yeah.
And you just didn't have the right timing.
Yeah.
Right. So sometimes you got the better end, sometimes you don't. Right. Yeah. And then I think that's the reality. And, you know, sellers have the option to test their luck, you know, maybe feng shui a little bit too, you know, we were compatible more and then, you know, therefore results in the sale and anything could happen. Yeah.
The feng shui is interesting because recently I have a listing. And it's facing a T-zone right now.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Those are hard now.
It is hard. Those one, I'm going in managing expectations. Like, your house is like 250K less than the recent comp.
Oh, geez. No, those are even deal breaker now. Anything that's like negative stigma.
Yeah.
Any property. Like, no matter how cheap it is.
Yeah.
There's just so many other better options to choose. They're like, I'm going to live in there. I don't want that. Yeah. Right. So it's tough for those type of property, I would say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right now, the buyers have so many options, so many choices. They're going straight to the cream of the crop listings, like the really, really nice ones, and trying their luck there.
Yeah.
Then they realize, okay, yeah, there's no way because there's so much upgrades and it's so nice.
Yeah, yeah.
But if they were willing to go with like maybe you find them a really good deal or you're a really good negotiator, then not the cream of the crop listings. You know, if the numbers make sense and it's such a super good deal, the buyers are going for that right now. The super good deals,
like, you know, buyers need to understand is they need to dig through like the properties that are like at least 60 days on the market. Mm. I think that's when the seller's expectation, because every seller is super optimistic at the beginning. Wouldn't you say so?
Are you 100%. Ready? Yeah. Seller is never realistic right in the beginning.
The beginning is like,
yeah, they need to experience it first.
No matter what market, 1.85 neighbor, 1.88 for me. That's what I think at least.
Yeah.
Right? There's always that optimism at the beginning.
Yeah.
And then they realize, wait, how come I only got one showing this week? Right. Then there's reality. Right. Mm. But it takes time. Like, what would you say is like a fair, let's say the property is worth $2 million. Right. On a week to week basis, like how much do they drop in expectation?
I would say for $2 million.
Yeah.
Anything that's $1 million to 1.5, I say 50K in a month.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Anything above 1.5, $2 million range, it could be 100K. Oh. I go into those listing appointments and say it's 100K less than a recent comp.
Oh, okay.
You have to. Yeah. Like, it may be just be 50, 60K. I hope for that.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm going in there 100K less.
Mm.
Obviously, it depends on the situation. Depends on the seller. Depends on that too, right?
Yeah, for sure.
And depends on the property. So many different factors. But if you're asking me, Jackie, like, what's my average? I'm going in there around 100K less if it's 2 million. Mm-hmm. Because right now, we're in a market that really is uncertainty.
Yeah.
Nobody knows when we're getting out of this funk, right? Because, and you saw it this year, it got a lot worse after Donald Trump.
Yeah.
Slap on the tariffs. Because earlier this year, January,
yeah,
we were crushing it. There was like so many listings and so many buying, so many deals left, right, and center getting done.
Nice.
This year, January, there was a big pickup.
Okay.
Right from that kind of pent up demand from the last quarter from last year.
Yeah, for sure.
And then all of a sudden, when Trump came into power, slap on the tariffs, everything came crashing down. Right?
Uncertainties, right?
I had a listing that was 1.8 around, with the first offer was like 1.85.
Okay.
Around January. Seller didn't take it. Okay. Even though like that is the recent comp.
Yeah.
Donald Trump came in, tariffs, and boom, no offers, no offers.
Damn.
And 60 days on the market,
mm-hmm.
2 months later, we got an offer, 1.6.
Oh, geez. And yeah. Did they take it? Or...
No.
It's too big
of a gap. We're renting it out. We're renting it out right now.
Yeah.
Because they can't swallow. What? My house dropped 200K in 2 months?
Well, I mean, not drop, but that's people lowballing a little bit.
That's what the market's saying, at least, right? Because right. 2 months ago, I got an offer written, right? 185, 180-ish. And then I got multiple offers at that time. Mm-hmm. And then now, 60 days later, the highest you're getting is 1.6, 1.62.
Mm.
So...
That's tough, yeah.
Yeah, that's how fast the market was dropping this year.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, crazy.
Crazy times we're in, right?
Hey, good for people who want to upsize a little bit. If they can sell their existing one, I think.
Yeah. You're obviously younger than me. Like, I started real estate in 2008.
Okay.
Yeah, so I've seen three cycles already.
Three cycles
and already. And real estate is all in cycles, right?
Okay.
So for the buyers or clients listening, like, don't worry. The market's going to come back for sure. Especially we experienced 2 years of like a bear market, right?
Okay.
Yeah. And you sell condos too. Like condos are crashing hard too, right?
Oh, I'm getting almost no showings in my condos. Oh, but thankfully I just sold one on Friday.
Oh, which one?
Fairview Mall ones.
Oh, congrats.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah.
Condos hard. Yeah.
Yeah, finally. Fairview ones. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, like condos, townhome, detached, it doesn't matter. The whole resale market has dropped a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But I was just telling agents that at this time, it's not for you to put your feet off the gas pedal, like go on vacations. Obviously, go take a break and enjoy.
Take a break and recharge.
But don't slow down and just expect that, oh, it's okay, the market's going to come back. Or like right now is the time for you to, you know, triple down at what you were good at, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you were good at door knocking, if you're good at cold outreach, social media, content, flyer campaigns, open houses.
Yeah.
Continue doubling down, tripling down on that, right? Don't go, there's not the time to go and try new things, chase the new shiny things. A new CRM system is not going to help with your business, my friend. Right?
Yeah.
Just double down, triple down, do more phone calls, do more conversations, go to your clients more, have more conversations, go do more meetings. And that's what it is. It's more relationship building.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Sure. 100%.
So when it comes to the future of real estate, right? I want to ask you, Jackie, like, are you a big AI guy?
I see you're doing more AI stuff. Like this,
for sure.
You're saying this is the future and everything. I use like the basic level, you know, AI. Like it actually makes our workflow much easier.
Yes.
Like making captions, setting up certain templates. Yeah, definitely make my process much faster, much more efficient. Brainstorming. I wish we had that for our high school or whatever. You know,
we'll right? be like
scholars.
Yeah, those kids are now doing their essays and everything from AI.
Yeah, I was just talking to my friends like the other day. We went to a college meeting and ultimately we're like, imagine we had like these AI ChatGPT or whatever like in high school. I remember those times where like I'm staring at like a blank Word document on their computer. It's like, oh crap, I need to finish my essays due on Monday and Sunday night.
Yeah.
And I'm just staring at it for like 30 minutes break. So what should I talk about? And it's so hard to write the first three sentences. Once you get it, then maybe you get it better.
Yeah.
But imagine it's like, okay, this is my essay. This is my work. Give me like 10 ideas. Give me the best one. And then you can just get off of that. I don't want to like plagiarize. Give me something good. And then write something nice.
Yeah.
Save so much time.
Hold that thought, Jackie. Hold that thought.
Yeah.
It's because that light just went off by
itself. Okay, no worries. No worries.
This is change the lights, okay. The battery.
Do I need to press anything?
No. Don't press anything. Don't press anything.
Okay.
Don't worry. Everything is still recording. And then we just.
Actually,
do you watch Joe Rogan or listen to Joe Rogan?
Rarely. Okay. But yeah.
So you don't listen to any other podcasts?
Lately, less podcasts. Okay.
Some podcasts.
Yeah.
There is like literally. Like if this something happens like this, I was like, oh, I need to go to pee. Or like, what? You just keep it all in there.
Oh, okay.
The more natural, because it's supposed to feel the whole vibe of our podcast. And I find the best podcasts are like, nothing's cut out. No edit. Real, raw conversations.
That's why I was like, you invited me to this podcast. I'm like, oh, okay. Do you have some set question you want to like me prepare or stuff? It's like,
I'm like, absolutely not, my friend.
It's like freestyle, but. Oh, okay, sure. Let's do it.
You know, that's the best way. You know how, like, we ever see agents catching up, you know, shooting the shit or whatever?
Yeah.
Those are conversations that are the best.
Yeah.
That's what I want to capture at Hustle Hard, Stay Humble.
Yeah. So
raw,
very
unfiltered,
unique.
Very unique. And it's different, right? Yeah. When it comes to the value that the audience is getting from something that's, you know, production or scripted, than actually real raw conversations like this.
Right.
Yeah. So going back to the thought of you're saying about AI, which is crazy technology, right?
Yeah.
That you're saying that it really, really helps and empower agents on the back end to be more productive, really.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, it's just helping me save time, writing up social media, whatever, save time on listening to descriptions. So if it's empowering agents like that, how do you think that it must be empowering the public, like the buyers and sellers? They have more tools, more power to data to go out there and buy and sell.
Yeah.
Do you think that AI technology at a whole will somewhat impact the real estate industry? What's your thoughts on that?
That's a good question. I mean, I don't know the power of that. I'm sure like it'll get so good that it's almost like a real person, or even better. Like they can work on people's emotions and all that stuff, the personal touch to it. If they can get to that level, right? Yeah, we could be completely replaced. But I think when someone needs something, I think they need that little bit of like personal touch to it, like who values someone who actually like, you know, listen to them and really understand them, give them the insight. And then ultimately it's still their decision at the end of the day.
Yeah.
So does it completely remove it? I don't think so, but I do think that it gives buyers and sellers a lot of tools to be even more knowledgeable about their property or the property they want to buy than us. Like for example, let's say we have like clients throughout the GTA. Like right now, I don't know if it's like everyone too. Like my buyers are sending me listings, not me sending it to them. Mm-hmm. It's like, Jackie, I want to see this. They already know kind of what they like, but obviously it's a learning process. We have to go see a batch of them. Then they have even more clarity and they see listings online faster than we do because we're not always on the MLS all the time. Right? Mm-hmm. We're out there. We might be checking different areas and then the area specific to them is like, we want to see this.
Yeah.
Yeah. How do you feel?
How do I feel is that that's why I asked you, would it impact the real estate industry? Because there might be a chance that the AI and tech gets so good to the point that buyer and sellers have all the data at the beginning. Mm-hmm. Why do they not necessarily still use real estate agents? They still use us for the personal touch. You're absolutely right about that. But the seller still need to pay that much commission. Right? Mm-hmm. Do they still need to pay 5%, 4%, 3%? Because now, because there's so much data and there's so much tools like AI that they can get, right? It's the beginning, not the end, right? Mm-hmm. You probably use AI for that, the same thing, right? The technology. Like you said, the buyers right now, they're getting their information from, doesn't matter if it's like the House Sigma or like they're getting listings before you, which is true. I get that all the time too.
Yeah.
My clients are sending me listings.
Exactly. Right?
And then obviously the whatever House Sigma price evaluation is not completely accurate.
I don't think it's accurate.
Right? But AI might get so smart that it will get the data will be pretty accurate. And a lot of people back then, or even now, they go to Google first thing, right? Whenever they're researching about deciding to move. Mm-hmm. Go to first thing, go to internet. Nowadays, I do that too. I go to AI for everything.
Mm-hmm.
Or like, what's a food recommendation? Travel, real estate, business. I go to AI first for everything.
Yeah.
And I see more and more of that behavior happening is that buyers and sellers, when they decide to move, they ask AI, hey, what is the moving selling process? What happens? AI will probably say, there's a 7-step process. You do this first, whatever, price evaluation, research your house.
Yeah.
Tell me what's your criteria, yada, yada, yada. They're going to send them information and all that.
Mm-hmm.
But around the 5th or 6th step, it'll tell you that, typically what you do is you call, interview an agent and see which agent is the right fit for you.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
There might be a chance that the data gets so powerful, the AI gets so powerful that they're going to be, actually there is, because I know from the inside at on the West Coast, Silicon Valley, tech brokerages are sprouting up.
Yeah.
There's startups now.
Mm-hmm.
Real estate tech brokerages are trying to come after for the traditional real estate brokerage model.
Okay.
So how that happens is these tech brokerages that leverage AI. So for example, if your clients or anybody are going to ask that AI about all the information and data, and to the point that they trust the data, then that AI might just not refer to the area specialist per se, that, you know, Bob Smith that specializes in Markham or whatever.
Yeah.
What they do is just refer straight to the tech brokerages. And how that impacts you, you're probably asking, like, okay, what are you getting to, right?
Oh, yeah.
It's like, okay, well, for example, typically when you go to a listing appointment, typically a lot of times the seller will interview two agents, maybe three agents, right?
Okay, fair.
Maybe one is a friend that's a real estate agent and one is the area specialist.
Okay.
Typically.
Yeah, okay.
So there might be the third agent slash rep from the tech brokerage now because they found them from the AI, right? And AI referred them. The tech brokerage will come in and will give them the whole presentation. That's all he does. Every day he does four or five presentations from the same iPad, the same deck, and tell them that, okay, when you go to compare, when you, in your listing presentation, you typically probably say that, okay, this is a marketing plan. Mm-hmm. This is how much money that we invest in your property when it comes to staging and the marketing plan. And here's the logistics, you know, maybe you're covering the movers, maybe you're not, those kind of stuff. Those, and then you say, I don't know, let's just say, for example, 5%. That's my rate.
Okay.
Okay. Seller's like, okay, thank you. Right. Doesn't matter if you're the area specialist, doesn't matter how much experience you have. Okay. Tech broker just come. That rep, he's probably on salary base.
Okay.
He's not a regular real estate agent, licensed agent.
Okay.
He just represents the real estate tech brokerage and be like, hey, so you found us from the AI, right? And the data that AI got, you trusted, right? And through that algorithm or whatever, this is what it says that your house should be worth in that range. Now, when it comes to logistics and what services we provide, everything that that area specialist said that they can do, we can do it too, but in-house. So we have our own in-house stager that's probably on salary based.
Okay.
We have our own in-house, are we talking about a showing rep? Or we have a showing rep too.
Yeah.
So everything that you say that in the human touch, they can do it and everything is in-house, but they charge half the commission.
Okay.
That might be where the future is heading. Because it's something that in the real estate industry, that commission of like, you know, everyone says that, okay, that's a big chunk of commission from the seller, right? 4 or 5%. So finally, there is something that might be the catalyst that disrupt the real estate industry where the 5% might be gone. It might be, I hope that's not the case. I wish it's not. But I'm always about being proactive and not reactive to what's going to happen. So I'm just, and I foresee that might happen. Because how powerful AI is, that these companies will leverage it to create these. Everybody's after the real estate industry to disrupt. It's just like, you know, there's the car industry, the taxi industry, and Airbnb. Well, the real estate industry is very lucrative because this it's a big ticket item. Right? And every company has tried being disrupting for the last 30, 40 years. No luck.
No luck.
But with AI, that might be the catalyst.
Okay.
That might be the catalyst.
And they're learning fast, right?
And that's the funny thing. Yeah. It's like you ask, like, can AI get so smart and replace agents and people would trust AI more than agents? Well, who's the one that's feeding information to AI? I'm feeding information to AI. I feed everything about how my real estate business operates, my marketing.
So
that deal flow, the transactions, AI is just getting smarter and smarter because what AI is at the end is LLMs, large learning models. It just gets smarter and smarter, my friend.
So, I think they will get smarter. There's definitely that personal touch that I don't think could be replaced. So at the end of the day, to be safe for everyone, is just like build your relationship.
Yes.
Take care of your people. And there are skills in real estate that's beyond AI. Like, are they able to do the follow-up to the point that you're able to, like, have a good chat with, let's say, the showing agent, be able to pull an offer off of them when they're clearly not interested? Is that AI, that robotic person, or they can make the sound so legit, but they know it's an AI, right? So the recipient, like the buyer's agent, will be like, nah, I'm not talking to a robot.
Yeah.
Get out of here.
No, I agree. And so, that's why I say that it won't completely replace us, the real estate industry, but it will impact a big way because they might replace the buying agents.
Yeah.
And that's why I said that tech brokerages can charge less because the age of, you know, two separate ends, you know, one listing agent represents the seller, one agent buying agent represents the buyer, might be gone. Everything, because the buyer has so much power now with, right, with the data and the technology. They might just cut out the buying agent and go straight to these tech brokerages that has these listings and... Yeah, the age of 4 or 5% commission might be gone because you probably see it too. Like you can self-represent. Open house, like buyers can self-represent now, right? So when they have more technology, they're more armed with these resources, there might be a point that there's no need for buying agents. And these tech brokerages might just have a full-time showing staff. If you're telling me that, well, you still need someone to open the door, well, that could be easily solved.
Yeah. So these tech company will probably recruit agents and bring them in too.
Could be.
So like some, there's some business already existing like that. Like
yeah.
They generate a lot of leads, right? And they have agents under them and they're feeding them leads.
Yeah.
Right. Which, you know, if you're an agent with like, you know, unable to generate more of your own business, that's good. Like, but I think they're going to take a big cut of you, but they control a lot of the market.
And that's why, and that's one thing I coach in my coaching program, is AI-proof your business. There's really only one way to AI-proof your business, in my opinion.
Yeah, what is it?
It's personal brand.
Personal brand.
You got to continue building and continue to building your personal brand, because the more your brand is relatable to your people, to your audience, the more they trust you.
Yeah.
More they trust you than more than the robot, right?
Yeah.
So... And that's why personal branding is so key, right? Yeah. When you can compare with, okay, should I use these tech brokerages, even maybe the lower commission, but offer the same service? But I will still trust Jackie more because I trust his brand.
Okay.
Yeah. That's the only thing that AI cannot replicate, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So I suggest in this, right? In this, this whole AI enigma that's happening now.
Yeah,
yeah, because you hear it too. Not just for real estate industry, is AI will completely disrupt every single industry.
Yeah, yeah. So don't be left behind.
Like, yeah,
start using it and learn from it, and be on the other side.
Exactly.
Right. Be on the other side rather than the one that's trying to catch up.
Yeah, it's the same goes, right? AI will never replace every single agent, but it will definitely replace the agents that don't use AI.
Yeah, and keep in mind, like, all this they're replacing are the new gen of people, right? The one previously, like let's say, like you know. I don't know which gen, right? Maybe the
which gen are you, Jackie?
I don't know. Anyways, but like, yeah, I'm saying like for those people who are like, they don't really know how to use a cell phone or, you know, like internet is like kind of new to them, right? It has to be the next phase who truly believe in AI and be educated and smart enough to be like, oh, AI, yeah, I trust that. I've been using AI all my life. And when it comes down to buying and selling, yeah. I can trust AI because non-bias, right? Some agents may be biased, giving you fake info.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, tell me about it, man. It's just kind of like my kids now, right?
Yeah.
They're using Siri and Alexa for everything. Yeah. So I can see that the next generation, remember like our generation or a bit even the one behind us, that they're always on the phone, social media.
Yeah.
And then like, Our generation, the previous generation, they were like so fed up. It was like, oh my God, these kids are always on the phone, always on YouTube. Yeah. And everything has to be on demand for them. Because why? Because it's the age of apps, right?
Yeah.
Everything's on demand. I want to Uber Eat this. Everything has to be demand.
Mm-hmm.
But I tell you, like my second daughter, which is like 6, 7 years old.
Okay.
They're not even apps now. They're like voice command. Alexa, what's the, play this song. Alexa, what's the... definition of this.
Yeah.
Alexa, translate this. So they're getting the age that they're getting used to.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Talking to like,
that's real, like watching Iron Man, you know?
Yeah.
Using Jarvis for that crazy thing is like interactive. That'd be sick. Like I envision like everyone having a robot and helping us doing all those annoying chores around.
Yeah.
That'd be nice.
That might be sooner than you expect. Like Elon Musk has Optimus, those robots.
Yeah, yeah.
And you see those videos in China, like those robot police and robot dogs everywhere.
I mean, there's really the cleaning robot. It's just adding more function to it. Like that one's just straight up to mop and clean the floor, but attach that to other stuff.
Yeah.
Then they could start doing cooking for you too. That'll be sick. And that's good value. Like, you know, I like imagine hiring a personal chef, personal this and that, all in machine. Plug into charge, learning as you go. Yeah,
my friend.
That's a good life.
So, Jackie, so any plans, any real estate strategies that you're changing up that you're preparing for real estate the upcoming year or next year?
To be honest, like always learning. Like,
yeah,
you know, this like no like plan per se, but I'm just like continue doing what I'm doing.
Yeah,
you know, unfortunate. Like I do have like you know, people who refer me. I am keeping myself busy. But yeah, always trying to learn new things. So maybe like pick up a little bit more AI stuff, see how it could be integrated into our business.
I'd love to share some insights with you.
Yeah. That'll be helpful. Right. So yeah, no like big major plans, but yeah, just continue growing. Right. And then, you know,
help. Awesome, man.
Yeah.
So we usually end our podcast with asking our guests, is there a favorite quote or mantra you live by? Or if not, you can suggest a book.
Oh,
your go-to book.
That's a good question. I don't think I have one on the spot. That's a good question. A book? I have many books that I've read.
Okay, a book.
What's a good book?
What's a book that really was a game changer for your either real estate journey, for business, self-development?
Mm-hmm. Power of Habit would be pretty good, I would say.
Yeah.
Right. So doing the same thing over and over again and then trying to improve like 1%, whether it's like 0.5%, 1%, like just improving every day and just being consistent with it.
Well, that's the Mamba mentality.
Mamba mentality.
You know my brother. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just get 1% better each day.
Yeah.
And that's it. And he speaks for himself, right? You see him from all the other basketball players. That's why he's one of the greatest.
Yeah.
Is that he does typically an average basketball player
will
train once a day between like, you know, whatever, 2 to 5 o'clock. He does three trainings a day. He's at the gym. I think, I don't know which Lakers teammate. He's like, he was at the gym since 3 a.m.
Oh, okay.
3 a.m. to 5 a.m. Then breakfast, take a break. Then go back to training.
Yeah.
Right? Lunch, then go back to training.
That's so good.
Yeah. But no, I'm not saying to go like as crazy as him, but he has the mentality like, hey, I'm just trying to get 1% better each day.
Yeah.
And then if you do that by the end of the year, you're 360% better, brother.
That's a different person.
You're 3 to 4x better.
Yeah.
From yourself and your business. So no, that's a powerful book.
Yeah.
And just like the other books you mentioned, like Rich Dad, Poor Dad, right?
Think and Grow Rich. It's like the staple.
Yeah. Right?
And then a bunch of other stuff. And it's just like all those books that are suggested, just trying to grab a little bit from each and then, you know, just maybe hopefully apply a little bit, right? Because listening to it and also applying to it.
Yeah.
Right? Reflecting on it and see if you can use it towards your business.
And then again, listen to audiobooks 2x.
Right? No, right now, like I said, like same as you now, 1.5. Yeah, listening to it. Yeah.
Yeah, I tried 2x before. I'm like, no, it's not happening. Yeah.
You probably said in your other podcast. Anything. So what's your quote? You probably said it in your other podcast before, like your personal quote that you go by.
That's why I call the podcast "How So I Stay Humble."
Oh, okay.
But
okay.
Another one that I live by is definitely "A Rising Tide Lifts All Boats."
Okay.
Yeah, and that's really I think that's very powerful. The power of like a community. Everyone's helping each other.
Excellent.
Iron sharpens iron. Yeah.
Oh, nice. Yeah. That's what your team is now, right? So
we call it community, right? And that's where I feel like it's powerful, where everyone truly actually want to help each other and support each other.
That's when really a
community
culture.
Model. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Culture is very important, right? Mm-hmm. When you're in an environment that you can truly feel like you can thrive, right? It makes a big difference.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, like real estate is pretty a lone wolf thing.
Yeah. Right? We've been there. Like, trust me, I'm there. I'm still there sometimes too, right? In between showings, you eat lunch yourself in the car, just grab a quick Tim Hortons wrapper. And I always say to my members, hey, if I don't see a bunch of rappers at the back of a car, you're not hustling enough.
gotta hustle.
No, but it's true.
Do you find the new agents hustling? Or
it depends. Like, actually, it doesn't matter. Yeah. I actually sometimes even see the vets or the agents that have been 5-10 years and they're no longer hustling. And it depends on the situation too.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they build up a system or maybe they build up a business that you know they don't need to hustle as much, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it depends. But what I see and care about is not how much experience or how much of a shark of a sales, how good you are in sales, is attitude.
Attitude.
I find attitude is actually the only thing I look at when it comes to if you're looking to join us at House and our community. If you don't have the right attitude, man, no matter if you're, I don't care if you did crazy amount of sales back in your previous job or your previous real estate brokerage.
Yeah.
If you don't have the right attitude, then what's the point?
Yeah. Fair.
So that's what I look for.
Excellent.
All right, man. So Jackie, for our audience, how can they find you? your platform or choice, a handle, like what's, yeah, how can I find
you? You can find me easily, Jackie Wu Realtor, J-A-C-K-Y-W-U Realtor. Yeah,
that's you know it.
Easiest way.
Yay, yay. That's all how right. you find Jackie.
Thank you, thank you.
Thanks, brother.
Thank you, thank you. Man. Oh, yeah.
All the best. Okay. Thank you.